What the Tech is brought to you by Warby Parker and their free home try-on program. Order 5 pairs of glasses and try them on for 5 days. There's no obligation to buy, ships free, and it includes a prepaid return shipping label. Head on over to warbyparker.com/GFQ to order your free home try-ons today. Cybercrime is all over the news. Hackable, an original podcast from McAfee, answers the question, how worried should I really be? Listen on all major platforms, including Apple Podcasts, and learn if your personal devices put you to risk. Listen and subscribe to Hackable wherever you get your podcasts. And by Netgear. When was the last time you upgraded your home's Wi-Fi? Turn your Wi-Fi up a notch with Netgear's new line of Nighthawk Wi-Fi 6 routers. Whether you're gaming online or watching Netflix in 4K, you'll enjoy buffer-free streaming with zero lag, no matter how many devices you're connecting to the network. To get more information, go to netgear.com/Wi-Fi 6. Make your Wi-Fi feel young again. Hey everybody, welcome to What the Tech. I'm Andrew Zarin. Of course, I'm joined by the returning, my favorite person, Paul Theroux. How you doing, Paul?
Pretty good.
Pretty good. You're back home. You had 2 weeks of travel, and so did I, actually. You were in the Netherlands. And
I've had 6 weeks of travel. I was in Miami before that, Seattle before that, Vancouver before that. A lot of travel.
Yeah, I was in England for what felt like months. I was there for like 7 days. I had a very busy week, and when I got back, you actually went to DC. So last week we couldn't do a show. I had to do a show with Iaz, which was great. Iaz is always great.
It's not slumming at all.
No, it's not slumming at all. I got a good guest last week.
Yeah.
No, the IS cool. from CNET. So yeah. we had him on, and then this week you're back, so I'm excited to talk to you about a bunch of stuff. Obviously, a lot's going on in the world of technology. E3 happened, and there was a lot of Xbox news that I kind of went into it with IS, but I wanted to hold off to discuss in detail with you. Also, Facebook getting in the cryptocurrency game with Libra.
Yeah,
I have a lot to talk about with that. I'm very curious. And obviously, Huawei delaying their foldable phones, the Pixel 4, and a whole lot more this week. Paul, I want to remind people, if you want to follow up on Paul, you want to know what Paul's up to, go to Theroux.com. Go check it out. Sign up for Theroux Premium. Great stuff on there. Great premium exclusive content. You do shows with Brad every day. You're traveling the world. You're doing these interviews. Actually, I heard... I saw one of your interviews that you did. Who was it? Jeez, I forgot his name.
Jeff Tepper or Tony Redmond?
Tony Redmond.
Yep.
Very good interview.
Yeah, Tony's great.
Yeah, very good interview. Really enjoyed it. So obviously a whole lot more we're going to talk about here. But Paul, are you done for the for the travel? Are you done with traveling for the next?
Yeah, so I'm going to be home for 1 month, and then we do our home swap, and I'll be near Amsterdam again.
Cool. So we'll work out that schedule. Before we continue, I want to welcome a new sponsor to the show. And this is, I'm actually very excited for this. As you guys know, I am visually impaired. I don't know if a lot of you know that, actually. I wear contact lenses. Many kinds of impairments here. I'm a little bit of a lush, so that plays into it, but I'm visually impaired. I have really bad vision, and I hate wearing glasses for the reason... It's not so much wearing the glasses. It's the process of getting new glasses every time you need a pair. Every year or two, probably generally every 2 years, I would go and I would get new glasses. And it would become such a pain to go to the store, try them on, guess what looks good on you. Maybe your opinion is, not so great. You may think it looks great, but the only other person that you have to kind of bounce off of is the guy behind the counter that just wants to sell you an expensive pair of glasses. Now, Waybury Parker has a solution for all of this. They have a free home try-on program. And this is great because my wife's done this. My brother's done this. I have a pair. My mother-in-law just signed up to do this because it makes the whole process super easy. So what you do, you order 5 pairs of glasses. And you try them on for free for 5 days with Warby Parker, right? This is how the process works. You go to warbyparker.com/GFQ. You order your free home try-on today. Then you get your five pairs of glasses. So you can pick on their website. So they have an app also that kind of does this really cool thing that it's like a virtual try-on with your glasses. So you can see the realistic colors, the textures, the size of each. I have a pair that I own, and they're bigger frame that I love. I think they look great on me. So when I tried these on, I ordered, you know, one that's very trendy. I ordered a very like standard, you know, a thinner frame. I did all that. And we almost had like a little try-on thing at my house with my wife and me both trying these things on, which was really awesome. There's no obligation to buy, by the way. It ships for free and includes a free prepaid return label when you head on over to warbyparker.com/GFQ to order your home try-on set. The glasses start at $95, including prescription lenses. Lenses include anti-glare and anti-scratch coating. Blue light filter lenses are also now available. This is a very unique concept that I absolutely love. Now, Paul, you wear glasses too.
Yep.
Yeah.
Blind as a bat.
Blind as a bat. Me too. I'm a negative 550. I'm nearsighted. I'm a minus 550.
I'm worse than that, by the way.
Yeah. Next week, I'll probably wear my glasses. I need to put these things on so you can see them. But the way that this works, they feel great. The quality's great. You're not getting this cheapo, you know, flimsy frame, which goes a long way, especially when you're destructive like me and you throw these things all around. It's a huge plus that they make great quality, you know, almost high fashion, I would call it. And you can pick different styles, different everything. Absolutely love these guys. WarbyParker.com/GFQ. Order your free home try-ons today. There's no obligation. Order these things. Try them on. See how you like them. And send the ones back. You send them back, and then they make them for you. It's awesome. Absolutely love them. WarbyParker.com. Let's begin, Paul, with a little rant I have to go on. Okay. And this kind of speaks volumes about the way that information spreads on the internet. And we are in a very, not going to say dangerous, but it is dangerous. But we're in this transitional period with the way we consume media. In the sense mm-hmm. that we're somewhat aware that, and for a lack of a better term, fake news gets spread. Mm-hmm. We're somewhat aware of this, but we're actually not. And I'm going to give you guys a great example of how due diligence when reporting news is no longer done. Okay. And this really upset me today.
Shouldn't be hard.
this really upset me.
Yep.
And speaks volumes. Traditional media, new media, this is all covering all grounds. This morning I woke up around 6 o'clock, got the kids ready. Around 7:30, I'm seeing pandemonium happen outside. I'm seeing fire trucks, ambulance, EMT, cops with dogs, with canines, walking up and down the block.
Wow.
And I'm saying, oh my God, what is happening? I look outside, they've shut down everything. And this is by a school and it's by the park. And I'm like, what the hell's going on? I thought maybe someone got into a bad accident. Maybe someone fled from the accident. Something happened. Mm-hmm. I see a report on a Facebook group saying that there was a deceased infant that was found on the baseball field.
Oh,
like in the middle. It was found in the baseball field. And that's terrible, right? Disgusting. One of the most heinous things that could happen in, you know, that you could think of. I'm in this Facebook group, locally for my town, and it's just flooding with people saying it's an infant, it's a 3-month-old. And then it comes out that the news is starting to report this, saying, you know, a 3-month-old infant in diapers was found deceased on the baseball field. Cops and all this stuff, they've confirmed it. All these reports are coming out. After 4 or 5 hours later, right now we're at about noon. So this happened around 8 o'clock, let's say, give or take 9, 10, 11, 12. 4 hours later, the story now changes where it was a doll.
A doll.
It was a doll. It was not a deceased child. Mm-hmm. So they reported that there was a deceased child. They confirmed with NYPD and FDNY sources that it was a deceased child. It was being reported that it's a deceased child. It turns out to be a doll, where the report says EMS rushed to the scene and initially pronounced the child dead. There's so much wrong with all this, okay? So much wrong. Yeah. How do you not report on something, or how do you report on something without knowing the information?
So to be clear, the complaint you have is really about the news organizations that saw the personal reports on Facebook or wherever it was and actually reported it as news without being sure what had really happened.
Yes. So what they did, they sourced initially with the story, and I asked somebody, because I walked down there, and I asked somebody, and they said they listen to the police scanners. They show up. They don't ask the police. They don't ask the firefighters. They don't ask EMT. Sure. They just ask. They literally just ask people like standing around what's going on.
And those are the best people to ask, the people.
The people that don't people know what's
have,
happening.
They have a great idea what's going on. Yeah.
But this kind of speaks volumes where, you know, the information goes out there. It spreads. What percentage of the people now know that it wasn't a real child? Right? What percentage of the people that initially read that report are now going to base their, you know, decisions or whatever based on this, you know, heinous story? Mm-hmm. I find it, and this is kind of, people should be a little bit more aware. And I saw this happen in technology.
People
should
be a lot more aware.
They really should be. And
you're really kind of underplaying this.
We talk about, I always say the joke where, you know, a time traveler shows up from 100 years ago. And, you know, he shows up here and he sees, you know, he lands in Times Square and he goes back in time and he goes, you know, it's amazing. All these people are walking around with these, with the knowledge of the world in their hands, and all they're doing is looking at cat pictures. But the reality is they're just looking at nonsense.
Yes, they are. It's possible that a future version of the human race that is based more on emotions rather than facts and science is a more elevated human race. I don't know. That's not the case
today.
But do you
think there's a solution for this? I mean, we see, you know, Facebook taking initiative and all these media outlets. They're talking about, you know, we're gonna fix stuff like this and we're going to do something
like this.
Isn't it almost an impossible uphill battle for them?
Here's the problem. I can tell you what happened. I can't tell you what's going to happen, right? We can understand how we got to where we are. If you've ever watched a local news broadcast, for example, you'll see that there are all these viewer interaction segments. There's a weather event happening. You post your photos to our Instagram account or whatever, and maybe we'll put them on the news. Or we've got like the citizen reporter stuff, you know. And the reason that happens is because there just isn't money like there used to be to fund this kind of stuff. Because now what they're competing with are these instant reaction online things, and they're trying to adapt to the times. And that's just one small example. You see this kind of quality gap occurring across the news spectrum, whether it's online news or TV news or radio news or newspapers or whatever. And it's just, you know, whatever. So, yeah, you know, we live in a world where people can self-publish. We were just kind of talking about this. They can put nonsense anywhere and people can respond to it. And we live in an age of bias confirmation where, because you can select what you want to see, you can go to the Apple News app or whatever you use and say, I don't want to see stuff from Fox News, or I don't want to see stuff from this publication or whatever it is. And your whole viewpoint gets skewed in the direction you're already heading down.
Yeah.
But you know, it's, as you said earlier, I mean, I was ranting about something else. I mean, these two topics are kind of related, and it's just the spread of ignorance. Like in the old days, if you were an ignorant person of whatever kind, racist or whatever it might be, and you were alone in your house with your shotgun and you could just sit there and you would affect nobody. It just, unless you know family members or whatever. But today your impact is a lot greater than when you were like the grumbly uncle guy that showed up on Thanksgiving. You know, you can be online and impact hundreds, thousands, maybe even millions, you know.
Yeah, it's
the dark side.
It is the dark side. I mean, it's amazing that everybody has a voice, and you could, you know, I just think that I always try to think, what's the solution here? And they're really, I imagine it getting a lot worse than it gets a lot better. I mean, obviously we could talk about censorship and things like that, and that's a whole different topic we could do one day. But I saw it and I'm thinking, you know, we always talk about this, about how in the digital age, you know, information spreads so rapidly and so quickly, but what are the consequences of false reporting when 80% or 60% of the people that initially read that report now have not followed back?
Dude, in the future, the consequences are going to be war or a nuclear attack or a terrorist attack. I mean, think about
deep fakes.
Yeah. The Vietnam War started on a lie, for example. And, you know, you can amplify that by a million or a billion or whatever. I mean, it's unbelievable. There are people who literally think if it's in a photo, it must be true, you know, or whatever. I mean, I believe my own eyes, you know, that's great because your eyes are fantastic. I can tell you from, you know, my experience as a bank teller and working in banks and having robberies and going through that, and everybody's recollection of something like that is completely different. I remember the woman next to me getting robbed, describing the guy and the hair color she said was completely wrong.
Completely wrong.
Completely wrong. Now, she was the one getting robbed, so she was really nervous and amped up and whatever. But I'm standing next to her and I'm looking at her because you can't talk. You're not supposed to talk to each other. I shouldn't have even heard her say it. But that's believing your own eyes. I'll believe it when I see it, that kind of thing. I mean, you couldn't have a less credible proof than your own eyes. So I don't know. So anyway, I guess my point is, for all this, is I don't know how this evolves. I don't know where this goes. I don't know how we fix it. But I mean, I feel like there has to be a reaction to the anti-intellectualism, the anti-truth, the anti-science, the anti-whatever you want to call it, that we're experiencing today. Probably not just here, but I'm sure around the world. So I don't know. I don't know.
I think it's fascinating. All right, Can I go on my rant?
Can I just real quick? I think I can explain this. I think I can explain this in a way that most people will begrudgingly appreciate, which is there's a lot of ignorance going around this Huawei stuff, right? So Huawei is caught up in this trade war thing with China and the United States, and the president has called them out as a national security threat, which there's no evidence of that, but, you know, like whatever, but... And, you know, and I hear from a lot of people who are saying things like, well, they wouldn't be doing this if they didn't have some evidence, or that, you know, the perspective here is like, we live in the United States or in the Western world, and we trust this style of government. We trust this style of society. This is the world we grew up in. And so the China thing, where Huawei may or may not have ties to the Chinese government, they may or may not have ties to the Chinese military. Completely different society, completely different system. We distrust them. They're wrong. I mean, they're just wrong. And like inherently, like it's amazing how often people, even really smart people, will say, well, yeah, but you know, they're up to something. Like they're, you know, the Chinese, and it's like this crazy racist, xenophobic, like this terribleness, ignorance, you know? So here's what that's like. I want to be really clear about this because I know that Huawei, like Samsung, like Microsoft, companies that we know and trust, ones in the United States, ones in South Korea, have stolen intellectual property from others and benefited from it, have gone to the top of their relative markets stealing IP, right? I know Huawei has done that. So that's not the complaint. The complaint is Huawei is a national security threat. There is no evidence of that. There is no evidence of that. I don't know if they've done it.
Are you talking in regards to the story of the guy that was arrested by Polish authorities for I think it was espionage?
I don't care about any of this. I'm just Huawei. You know, Huawei has curved screens on their phones, just like Samsung.
Okay.
Where do you think they got that? Or whatever. Like Huawei has definitely stolen intellectual property. Okay, fine. That's not the problem. That's not what anyone's complaining about. We know that the national security thing is fake because the government, the president and others have come out and said, you know, if we strike a deal with the Chinese that's favorable to the United States, Huawei will be let back in. And if they were literally a national security threat, that would not be the case. That's a fact. It's irrefutable. Yeah.
But you're not going to curb, you're not going to be able to let them in once there's national security.
No, threat. If they are national, you know, then it's not like Iran wants to make a phone. It's like, yeah, go ahead. It's fine. We're not going to do that. They are a national security threat. No. Okay. But here's what I'm going to compare it to. And I think this is my Joe average person on the street. This is what I compare it to.
Yeah.
I grew up in Boston. I just happened to grow up in Boston. I was born there through no choice of my own. That's my background. I am a Boston sports fan. To this day, I have lived here for 2 years. We have spent the last 2 years watching the Boston Red Sox on MLB TV rather than watching the Phillies, which is the closest team to us. Why? Because I just happened to grow up in that environment. I grew up as a Catholic, like a lot of people who just, religion is just handed to you. I realize some people choose religion later in life or choose a different religion, but you're born into this religion. A lot of people like that think their religion is the religion. It's the right answer. It's the best one. It's the the real one. When we go to heaven, only we are going to heaven, that kind of thing. Like, you can't just be born into something and assume it's the best or the right one or whatever. It's if you don't know anything about the other stuff, then you're not qualified to opine on it. So this is a life example. One of the things I do, I think we've talked about this a little bit, take my kids to Europe on these home swaps in the summer. I want them to experience different cultures. I want them to be comfortable with things that are different so that when something different occurs, whether it's good, bad, or indifferent, they don't freak out just because it's different. They don't have to just eat cornflakes and milk for breakfast. They can experience these other things. They don't have to just speak American English. They're not going to act weird when they hear someone with an accent or see someone who has different colored skin or someone who has different opinions or traditions or whatever it is. I just don't want them to be ignorant. That's the whole point of it. It's literally the point. And when you complain about the Chinese system or Huawei and you have no idea what you're talking about, you're just being a dick Boston sports fan or one of those terrible one-sided religious people who refuses to acknowledge that someone who is religious in a different religion and loves God or whatever they believe in isn't as good of a person as they are. And I just don't understand it. I sort of understand it, but it's so knee-jerk. And otherwise smart people will spout out nonsense about this stuff.
Let me play devil's advocate here, right?
Mm-hmm.
I'm not going based on your opinion, obviously, here. I've for many years we've done the show and we have heard many tech journalists from major publications discuss the dangers of Chinese products, third grade or second grade Chinese tech products entering the U.S. market, yeah, and them having malware and them, you know, they have some stuff on the chipset that's listening in and it's spying and it's recording, sure, and it's doing all this stuff. We've heard this for the last 10 years. So mm-hmm. now you have Huawei, which I'm not positive, but they were kind of lumped in that group in the early days. I know ZTE was.
Oh, yeah. No, they've been part of it for a while.
They've been part of it for a while. So now you have Huawei making some really interesting and legitimate high-quality products now. So now it's going to be a reconditioning to kind of look into this when we had a narrative for the last, let's say 7 years. The narrative was, don't trust these phones. They're spying on you. And there was some proof of that.
No one's worried about the phones. It has nothing to do with the phones. I'm
saying from the consumer side.
Yeah, but
right? Like the argument that I'm hearing. I'm hearing it from the layman that's saying, Do you seriously
believe that these phones could be out in the world in the hands of consumers spying on people and we wouldn't know that this capability existed or was happening? Do you actually believe that? I think Bigfoot is real, but for some reason, the whole world has smartphones and no one has ever taken a video of this thing. It's a ludicrous assertion.
I don't think it happens to the extent that people think it happens. I think the more of the danger is the software side of things, not the actual hardware. I think when people are being compromised, it's software compromised. The software's compromising them, and it's not necessarily a phone.
Compromising. The point hardware. Is, I don't think this has ever actually happened. Someone will come to me and say, hey, I saw this thing like Huawei stole something from, some software idea or whatever it is from some other company, or they did whatever they did. Or look, Huawei put ads on their lock screen, by mistake, as it turns out, or whatever. It's like, see, they're a really bad company. Good thing, the United States went after them. It's like, this has nothing to do with that.
This is a bargaining tool. I understand the whole thing. It's a bargaining tool. It's a negotiation tactic. This is how this all works. I understand the stance of they may be dangerous when you have read reports for many years that...
How do you think, just for a second, how do you think the average person in China or Germany or Uruguay or India, you can pick your own country, it doesn't matter, thinks about us? What do you think they think of our government, yeah, who has spied more than any other government, has spied on our allies, by the way, who has literally inserted malicious computer code into governmental computers in other countries? What do you think they think of us?
It's exactly the same.
I'm not defending China. It's a terrible country. And I'm not defending Huawei. In some ways, they are a terrible company. My point is Samsung is a terrible company. Microsoft was a terrible company. Today, actually, you could make the argument maybe they aren't.
Don't you dare say Apple, Paul. Don't you dare say Apple.
Apple is absolutely a terrible company. But it's just, it's so, like the whole thing, it's like, if it's just, if it boils down to it, well, they're Chinese. Like, I'm sorry, you're being racist. Like, there's not a lot of thought behind it.
Everything is Chinese. Everything is Chinese.
Every phone, I've got 5 smartphones in front of me. Every single one of them was made in China. I've got an Apple MacBook here sitting, I'm trying to find the power cord too. Made in China. You know, I mean, I guess it's okay when we need low cost, workers or whatever that we don't have to think about too much because, you know, they're only Chinese. Who cares? Like maybe they're committing suicide. Maybe they're not making enough money to support themselves. I don't care. They're in China. You know, I reject this whole lack of thought, lack of anything behind the arguments. And it's just, all I can tell you is this. I've reviewed a couple of these Huawei laptops. They are, if not the best, among the very best I've ever used in my life.
Yeah.
The smartphones, stunning. Likewise. The hardware, the camera especially. The software I don't like that much, but I've complained about that. It's probably because it's a little China specific. But the hardware? These are literally the best phones in the world right now. They are out innovating Samsung and Apple by a wide margin. And the photography stuff, you've seen some of the pictures I posted.
Dude,
it's astonishing.
We could go back to the early days of Samsung smartphones, and it was a very similar argument.
Right. Right. Well, it was, except no one was making sanctions against South Korea. Nobody was trying to prevent Samsung from doing business with the United States companies. That's the difference. And is the Korean government that much like us? I mean, is it? I don't know. I actually don't know.
You go back to the 1970s.
Yeah.
The Korean government was not so great. It was almost like North Korea for many of them, and that's why we have such a tremendous South Korean population.
There's gotta be a statute of limitations on this stuff. Like,
I feel like
Germany's, I know there's a terrible right wing thing happening in Germany right now, but I mean, Germany as a society, Germany as a government has certainly turned things around. I mean, maybe it's time to, let go of the World War II era arguments against Germany or whatever.
Yeah. All right, I think this is a great conversation. I feel like I could talk to you about this for God knows how long. You and I could have this discussion. But you know what? We could do like a what the talk going into detail. But I think that's a great point to bring up. And it kind of plays into this. Before we move on, you kind of touched on it where it kind of ties in exactly what I was saying. You've had conditioning by certain people in the media telling you this, especially in the tech media, telling you this about Chinese brands. And there's a reverse.
I'm sorry to keep interrupting. It's also very much tied to what you were complaining about too. There's that kind of thing. We've been fed a bunch of misinformation. You'll notice that not one of the United States allies has ever come out public and said, guys, it's way worse than you think. The United States has shown us this incredible treasure troves of data and evidence, and they're right about Huawei and they're right about China, and we are not working with these guys. No one has ever said that. and not even hinted at it. So, I mean, think about it. The reason this came up is it is tied to what you just said, because it's not just misinformation and it's also ignorance. It's also, we live in an era of great ignorance. Like we've stopped thinking, and you're allowed in our society and in our world to have crazy opinions about things, regardless of your level of intellectual understanding of the topic. Like, your opinion matters. You have a soapbox. You can get on the internet and on Twitter and wherever you go, Facebook, and you can spread your bullshit to people who don't know any better, you know? And I, these things combined are the toxic hell stew.
Yeah.
That is this, you know, this world we live in.
So you touched on some really great points here, and it kind of ties into the next thing I'm going to talk about here. And that's this great podcast, Hackable. Have you listened to it?
No, I have not.
It's actually really, I'm going to tell you, and I don't say, I'm not saying this because I, obviously they're an advertiser here and they're sponsoring the show. I did not think I would be so into it as much as I am. So Hackable is an original podcast from McAfee, and it covers cybercrime to an extent, and hacking, and how easy and vulnerable we are. So what they did on a previous episode, by the way, this is the how worried should I be type stuff, right? You can listen to this podcast on all major platforms, Apple Podcasts, on Google, on Spotify, all the major spots. So we generally talk about, on this show, we generally stick to the greatest internet-connected technologies, and we talk about smartphones. But today, this kind of goes into this, where we're discussing vulnerability and, you know, emotionally vulnerable via reading fake stories and then sticking and not knowing the exact story, or having vulnerabilities on our phones, like you're talking about Huawei, and people have this fear that, you know, they're going to be compromised. So what these guys did on a previous episode, I really think you guys should check it out. It's called Hackable. They wanted to see how easy it is to essentially take all the data off someone's iPhone. And they go down the process. They bring in a hacker, you know, a white hat hacker, and he actually takes the data off of one of the host's phones. And down to, you know, photos, text messages, recorded conversations, they were able to do all of this. I thought it was done so well. I'll tell you what episode it is if you guys want to check it out. Actually, I closed it right here. I think it was 5. I could be wrong, but it's like 5 or 6. You guys have to check it out. I was listening to it. They're on their 4th season now, so they have a backlog, obviously, of content, and, you know, they're able to do all this great stuff. So, they do stuff like they hack printers, hack appliances that are connected, smart appliances, drones, webcams, phones. This is really well done. It's made by the guys at McAfee. I really have started enjoying the show, and they've made me into a fan of it. So I wanted to kind of bring it up here today. It's called Hackable, available everywhere podcasts are, all major platforms, including Apple Podcasts. Go check them out. Paul, you should check this out. It's actually a really interesting show. The host does a great job with it.
We'll check it out.
Yeah. So essentially, they were talking about how vulnerable your iPhone is. And it was literally like he clicked on a link, and people kind of have this understanding. That, like,
that's why I use Android. I'm sure it's perfectly safe.
That's why I'm using the most open platform for phones. I thought it was done really well. So it was pretty cool. It's like Mr. Robot meeting Mythbusters. That's nice. Kind of how I would describe the show. Really well done. It's called Hackable. Talking about, since we're on the crypto conversation, cyber crimes, cryptocurrency, hacking, Huawei. You know what, Paul?
Hacking.
I want Huawei banned. I just want to see you explode.
Yeah. They should be banned.
Yeah, and then we'll be at a bar. Jerks. We'll be at a bar. You're going to beat me up, but you'll mistaken me for somebody else, and you'll beat up that person.
Yes. Did you hear that story?
I did hear that story, and I thought it was phenomenal. If you haven't, go listen to Windows Weekly. Phenomenal. It's way worse. I'm positive it's way worse than you explained it, too.
A poor woman.
And she lives in your neighborhood.
Man, that's messed up. You have no idea.
You guys have to check out the story. I won't do it justice. If Paul explains it again for the second time, it won't be that good. Go listen to Windows Weekly from last week. Let's talk about Libra. And Facebook entering the cryptocurrency world. So it went live today.
Not the service, but
the chain, the blockchain.
The blockchain. Oh, that I'm not sure of. I mean, it's not going to be available to consumers until next year.
Yeah, I think that I'm so behind in my cryptocurrency conversation. I was really into it at one point, and then I kind of fell off. Now I'm trying to get a lot of the information back, so I won't do it justice by kind of explaining how this stuff works. But essentially, they are creating their own currency, digital currency, for people who are not really into know how cryptocurrency works. They're creating their own digital currency, and they use the term to give banking to people who don't have access to banks. What a, first of all, I have a real.
Sorry, are you not believing that?
What a crock of crap.
Wow.
That statement is. I feel like this is them pandering, you know, they're like, those poor people that don't have a bank that need us. They need Facebook.
Well, actually, I don't know that they need Facebook. I think the funny thing is it's Facebook, right?
But Facebook.
But actually, I think the need for this kind of thing is real. And what this does is it takes the types of technologies behind Bitcoin and does it in a way that is more stable and less volatile, is tied to legitimate, current governmental currencies like the euro and the US dollar. And that thing that they're describing, it's not an issue here, probably, in the United States. I mean, I guess it would be in some circles. But I think, you know, in the same sense that there's X number of billion people in the world, a lot of them live in remote places that don't have great internet access and so forth, and they're never going to have a computer. You know, their only computer ever is going to be some kind of a phone. I think that's the big audience they're talking about. And this is these types of societies, this stuff is big in India and I'm not sure where else, but in other places as well, where it's kind of a micro transaction driven economy. I mean, honestly, this sounds, if Facebook wasn't associated with it, this is the type of thing, this is like an Isaac Asimov post government future, where the currency becomes something that is not supplied by a government, right? It's in this case, Isaac Asimov's Foundation book, it was companies that did it. But actually, in this version of the future, it's going to be a decentralized, you know, open standard or whatever. I mean, so I think it's kind of interesting.
I'm not against the concept. I just don't believe Facebook.
It sounds like you hate Facebook.
I don't trust them in their delivery of information. Right. Facebook should be the governors of speech. I don't think Facebook should be the governors of finance. Makes sense.
So I hear you. And I am also of the opinion that Facebook is not to be trusted. However, you could make the argument. We just talked about it, to tie it back to the thing I just talked about, you know, this notion that people grow up where they grow up, or they grow up in whatever system they grow up in, they assume that's the right system, you know. This is a future leaning look at what finances could become, what currency and lending and investing and whatever could become, right? So the idea is very good. I'm not a financial expert or whatever, but I mean, to me, it seems solid. But the problem is this Facebook. And just to play devil's advocate, I'll just throw this into the mix. You could make the argument that what should succeed in the future is the thing that is most universally popular, right? Hmm. And so if Facebook is able to succeed, and of course they're doing this as a sort of, it's not a spinoff really, but it's like a Facebook company called Calibra. The currency is called Libra. It's not called Facebook Money, right? It's like a, you know, you know what I mean? Like they're trying to do it as a separate thing. So Microsoft does this with LinkedIn. They do it with GitHub. Now Facebook is doing it Google itself split itself into different companies.
Yeah.
One of which is called Google, right? And they created a new parent company, shell company, I'm sure it's called. And all their other things are nonsense, but they are other things. And so I don't know, you know, I hear you, but I mean, I agree with you. I should say, I agree with you 100%. Facebook is the problem. However, what if this thing's popular? Like, what if it works?
Well, you know? I have a friend that's very much in the crypto world, a very good friend. And mm-hmm. I'm not going to say who he is. You guys wouldn't know him, but this guy was He was a construction worker, essentially. Very smart. I mean, I'm not taking anything away from his job, but he was a, you know, self-educated man, mm-hmm. contractor, very successful at what he did. And he took a lot of money and he put it in Bitcoin. And he's probably a multimillionaire at this point. And he left his job.
But hold on a
second. But I'm gonna go into
it. So he did this in 2017.
No. You know? He did this in 2012. 2013. Oh, okay. Yeah, early on. Yeah. And he quit his job, and he started studying all of this guy. This guy has become a millionaire 10 times over because he's so educated about this. So I actually was talking to him today. I called him to ask him about this. He said the money, the micropayments and the points that Facebook will make, you could tell that he's a degenerate gambler when he says points.
The points
too.
That Facebook will make.
Yeah, so for every transaction, there is a small percentage that Facebook is taking from this.
Mm-hmm. Would you call it a microtransaction?
A microtransaction. So let's say it's $100, 100 Libra. They make, whatever it would be. I don't know. 0.1%. That is a very small portion of how they're going to make money off of this. The money will be in this becoming another Bitcoin and exploding. That's where the money's going to be. So they're going to make their money off of people investing and trading on the blocks.
Okay.
That was his concept. Well, I mean,
what are we
concept.
Complaining about? Do banks, when you put money in a bank.
Not complaining.
Your
not
bank
complaining.
Invests that money.
No,
they
not
pay
complaining.
You a small. Okay, I'm just saying, I find myself, you do this to me a lot. I am in the awkward position of defending a company I don't like, right? So, but again, I'm just going to devil's advocate this one. Yeah. What if Facebook made so much money with this Libra thing that the other stuff they did didn't matter anymore, right? Like the ads on Facebook wouldn't be necessary anymore. What if they just said, you know what, this is how we're going to make money? You know, it's kind of like Google does this, right? So Google sells ads. And they have a search service that drives it, and they push other things, through this search service and through their ad network. And then they have all the stuff that's free, So Google could essentially, Facebook in this case, maybe they're looking at this as their, although they have a tremendous ad business actually. But I mean, if this thing became big, isn't directly making money providing a service a much better alternative than selling ads?
I agree with you.
Right?
I'm not against. Actually, the Libra Association that they founded, they just get a single vote, so it includes them, Visa, Uber, a bunch of other people. I'm cool with it.
Yeah, there'll be 100 of them by next year.
There'll be a bunch of them, and this could really, like you're saying, this could take off. My only thing is, I don't like Facebook.
I know that's the one thing I agree with you on, and you've made very clear.
I really don't, and I do think if there is an initiative to push this, and Facebook today released the white paper explaining what it is, and I'm like, it's so Facebooky with the way that they word everything, and I would much rather trust this coming from a different point of view rather than we're going to give emerging markets this freedom to not rely on government currency. I think that's their PR spin on it. The reality is they're creating a cryptocurrency platform that could work.
I actually think that's the primary selling point of this platform.
You think so? I'm curious to see it in 5 years. Yeah.
Yep.
I mean, if that that's
because
the case,
they've engineered
then that's
it not
initiative.
To be volatile, so it can become a trusted currency, right? And it's I think the problem is like a lot of people looked at Bitcoin in the very beginning and they said, this could make a ton of sense. And then it became all about speculation and gigantic ups and downs and whatever. Listen, this is the future beyond my lifetime probably, but whatever you want to call it, Isaac Asimov, Star Trek, whatever. I think this is something like this is the future. I mean, it's I guess you could look at although again, there's always going to be pushback. I mean, that's how these things work, but you have the EU, which has organized a bunch of they're still independent countries, single currency, open borders, blah, 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 and all the other stuff. And there's a lot of grossness about the EU, of course. I get that. But, it's like the post-national experience, and it gives them an economic footing to compete with the United States or China or whatever, et cetera, et cetera. This thing expands beyond that. I mean, this is like, if you look at like Mexico doesn't use the US dollar, for example, right? But across the EU, most of the member states do use the euro. Yeah. What if there was a currency that was like a bunch, it was like the euro, but it was in a bunch of different countries?
Oh, no, you're getting in
the
United
States and Canada and, Brazil or whatever.
Do you know about that conspiracy? Do you know about this? You just hit. It's called, I think it's called the Armero, and okay. There is a major conspiracy that that it started in the 90s and it led into, you know, after NAFTA and everything, that Bill Clinton and George Bush were attempting to do this, where you would have one currency for all of North America. And this is a big spot with conspiracy theorists. But that's essentially what Bitcoin and these cryptocurrencies are, right?
Yeah. Yep. I wouldn't call it a conspiracy theory, but it is a I think maybe you know what it is. I grew up in science fiction, and maybe this is just my science fiction-y bias, you know, whatever you want to call it, coming out. But I mean, I see this in the light of, yeah, I could see this future enrolling.
I also
trip over the Facebook thing.
Yeah. I'm going to tell you something, to kind of break the fourth wall on the show. This is becoming one of my favorite episodes of the show.
This is a science fiction thing. So like, you know, yeah. The Terminator movies, if you want to kind of go lowball on it, you know, there's a company that existed that created these Terminator things in the world, you know, the world ended in the Foundation series by Isaac Asimov. There are these companies, you know, in the world of Alien, the movies, there are these companies. The power structure is not country based. It's company based. You know, this thing seems a little more decentralized. Like, I don't know what you call, like, for example, the EU is a federation or whatever of company. Okay, sorry, I stumbled over that. Countries. You know, now we're talking about a currency that is decentralized and could become multinational and cross, you know, if it's successful or something like it. Like, I guess, I mean, I look at this and I think, like, this could make sense, you know, in the same sense that, you know, the world has at one point, and much of the world still does, kind of operated on the gold standard, right? There's been this notion of the, you know, the U.S. dollar, where different countries compare the value of their currency to that of the U.S. dollar, probably less common these days. I don't know. This sounds kind of interesting to me.
It is interesting. It really is. Before we continue on with this amazing conversation, I always describe the show, by the way, when I tell people ask me, like, what's your what's what the tech? I say, imagine listening to two guys at the bar, but talk about tech only, not talking about the Yankees and the Mets or the Red Sox.
Well, you know what? So that's a good description, but the part you're leaving out is as they are there longer and they're drinking more, the conversation
kind of veers
into some unexpected places sometimes.
That's where we begin.
Yeah,
where our show begins. Right.
We should call this podcast Three Drinks In.
Three. You know what? That's a great podcast name.
Yeah.
That's a great podcast name. Before we continue, I want to thank our great sponsor, and that's Netgear. You upgrade your phone, you upgrade your TV, you upgrade your laptops regularly, but when was the last time you upgraded your Wi-Fi? It's probably been a while. For me, it was a while before I got my Netgear router. Well, the future is Wi-Fi, and it's here, and it's time for Wi-Fi 6. The Netgear Nighthawk Wi-Fi 6 routers gives you ultra-fast speeds and wider coverage throughout your home. I can tell you that that's absolutely true because I hooked one up right outside here. And generally, when I had a router up there, I had my standard Fios router and I had another brand. I'm not going to say the name. And it would never reach all aspects of my house. I have a very old house. I think my walls are filled with asbestos, lead, and any kind of metal that they found, and rocks. Because nothing penetrates these walls in this house. It's an old, old house. So when I put this router in, I'm actually able to get service in my backyard, which was never possible before. The Nighthawk 6 router gives you ultra-fast speeds, obviously. You get four times the capabilities compared to today's routers, which means you can connect more devices and stream simultaneously without impacting your Wi-Fi speed and reliability. The devices of today and tomorrow demand more. Your old Wi-Fi is timing out, and it's time to check out Netgear's new line. Go to netgear.com/Wi-Fi 6. That's netgear.com/Wi-Fi 6. And experience what Wi-Fi streaming and essentially everything you do, experience what it's supposed to be. You can connect all these devices. You can stream Netflix, Hulu with no buffer, no problem, especially smooth 4K streaming, which is great. It's like you're in the VIP line with your bandwidth. Netgear.com/Wi-Fi 6. I want to thank Andrew. Netgear for supporting the show. Yes, sir.
Sorry. Can I inject a little bit of breaking news?
Yes.
You may have seen the story. I think it was yesterday that Google had been accused of scraping data from a lyrics service, and that the way that they proved it was that they inserted Morse code into the lyrics in the form of different types of, what do you call it, quotes? Whatever the symbol is. So Google has responded to this, and they have basically blamed the services that they do pay, because they say that they don't scrape from anything, but they do use a number of third-party services, and one of them must be the one that's doing the scraping. So they've gone to these companies and said, you need to figure this out because we're getting blamed for this. So they're basically saying it's not their fault.
So do you know the service?
Yeah, I think it's called, is it called Genius?
Genius, yeah. Spotify uses them. So yeah. They don't just do rap lyrics. I've seen this everywhere.
Yeah, no, they're a general purpose.
It's very lyrics. General purpose, but like almost every headline says like rap lyrics.
They're
stealing, you know. I don't know why that's the angle here, but they cover a wide range of stuff. Maybe a lot of it is hip-hop and rap stuff, but they essentially put the lyrics on Spotify. So if you're on Spotify and you listen to a song like, let's say, Old Country Road by Lil Nas X.
Not by John Denver.
Not by John Denver. Little Nas X.
Not the country road I know, but go on.
Not the country road. This is a very different country road, I'm going to tell you.
It sure is.
Very different. So you could actually, you know, it tells you the lyrics, and then it tells you, like, what certain things mean, because you're old and white, and you don't know what, like, certain hip-hop phrases would mean.
Wait till you find out what those Def Leppard lyrics are. Yep.
So it's actually a pretty useful service. So Google now is blaming the third parties that they hire to do this.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, is it really their fault?
I guess we'll find out. I have a feeling that the guilty party is going to be identified fairly quickly.
Yeah.
So I guess we'll see.
And they'll probably pay Genius to use their lyrics. Use what they do.
They will probably be sued, or, you know, I guess we'll see. Yeah.
I mean, can you be sued for that? Can you be sued for scraping lyrics?
Yeah. Sure. I mean,
aren't you just transcribing what the lyrics are and just putting it in?
Yeah, but, you know, in this case, so, yeah, but you've done the work, right? I mean, I think the issue is that they've created a business that you can pay to use the service. And people are not paying, and they can prove now that they've stolen the content. So, yeah.
Yeah, I find that interesting. I don't know.
I guess we'll see.
Oh, I mean, they've done this for a long time, right?
I just find it fascinating that they went right after Google. And
that's balls, too.
Well, and another example of, you know, it's a juicy story, right? Like, especially you add the little rap lyric part of it. You get that whole middle-aged white guy Google thing going on versus the...
Yeah,
young
urban upcoming.
Yeah, of course we're stealing from them, you know.
Yeah.
So it's an interesting twist. I mean, I don't think a lot of people, you know, look, it's not wrong as a journalist to report on what's happening. This company has accused Google of something. It's a juicy story because it's Google being accused by a really small company. But we'll.
Maybe Google will buy them now.
The internet. I suspect this story is not going to be publicized as highly. As the original one, right? That's the way this works.
Yeah, that's how it always is. Yep. I want to get your opinion on the Pixel. Actually, no, I'm sorry. I want to talk to you about Xbox. I got to prioritize here. Okay. I want to get your opinion on Scarlet with two T's.
Mm-hmm.
Which it is. That's the two T's are a name, right? And not the color.
That's right.
Okay. So let's talk about this.
Yeah.
What do we know?
So there's not too much to say other than that I was going to say it's all good news. It's not all good news. I actually think that originally Microsoft and Sony both planned to ship their next gen consoles this fall. In fact, Sony mysteriously opted to not go to E3, and the presumption, which I believe was correct, is that they wanted to have their own special event just for PlayStation 5, right? And then about a month before E3, all of a sudden, Sony was like, yeah, we're not going to discuss the console this year. And then Microsoft, which was also widely expected to be releasing this thing. And if you think about the release schedule of the console, the Xbox One, the first gen came out in 2013. Xbox One S came out in 2015. Xbox One X came out in 2017. When's the next one going to come out? 2019, right? Every 2 years. Now it's not, probably because Sony... Well, no, I was sorry. I was going to say probably because Sony delayed theirs. No. I actually think the reason is both of these companies are using what is essentially the same AMD chipset, and I don't think it's ready yet.
Oh,
I think they're delaying it because of the major hardware component. And so it's going to benefit everyone in a way, because the resulting systems will be tweaked a little bit, will probably be a little better than they would have been otherwise. But as far as what we know about it, which is not much, the part we do know is very good. And it's what I expected. And so Microsoft will say things like up to 8K, like that means anything, and you know, whatever. But here's what it really is. It's exactly what I said it should be. It's a version of the Xbox One where every game plays at 4K resolutions all of the time, always at 60 frames a second or better. And that's exactly what it should be, because that's not what the Xbox One X is today. Today, most developers have to make a decision about the thing that's most important to their game. If you have a shooter, for example, like a Call of Duty type game, you're going to choose frame rate over resolution. You have to. You know, that's because the frame rate and the latency is what will kill the game. It's where it doesn't work. You want it to look as good as it can, but you have to lean in that direction. And so this new Xbox One, Scarlet, whatever they call it, fully backward compatible, of course, it's an Xbox One, but it will play every game at 4K, 60 frames a second. And that, there you go. That's a big story there.
That's really part of it, right? I want to touch on the 8K aspect of this.
Well, that's marketing nonsense.
Is that marketing nonsense, or is that future-proofing the device so they don't have another Xbox 360 scenario where they weren't prepared for the future?
There's not going to be any such thing as 8K Xbox One Scarlet games. I mean, not meaningful games. You know, the fact that a computer or a computing device can display at a certain resolution is fascinating, but things need to run around on the screen, and you know, stuff has to work, and so. This console generation doesn't. There's no such thing as 8K right now. There's no real 8K. There's no 8K content in the world. There are no real 8K TVs per se. It's not a thing. And I get it. You know, it's next year. Blah blah blah. Whatever. But I mean, I we're reaching a kind of fatigue with the specifications, where it's not like the old days when you went from VGA to SVGA to, you know, XGA,
whatever.
That was a big difference.
Yeah.
There was a big difference. Like, you know, once you get past 4K, like we're talking about, things are moving really quick and, you know, whatever. I don't mean to say we're fine, we're never going to move past 4K or whatever, but we're not really at 4K in the current generation. And that's kind of the point, right? So the Xbox One S, which came out now 4 years ago, could display 4K for movies and for content like streaming video services. The Xbox One X can display 4K. I guarantee you, I don't play a single game that ever runs at anywhere near a 4K resolution on my Xbox One X. I guarantee it. There is no such thing, because the games I play are shooters and they require fast action, blah, 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 and frame
and
rate.
And they can't do the frame rate. Yeah.
It's impossible. It's just not that powerful. And so this is the goal, you know, within the Xbox One generation of consoles. There will be a version that can do that thing I said, which I've been saying for years. This is what they need, you know, 4K, 60 frames a second. And that's what it is.
Why do you think it was just marketing jargon that they put out there that, you know, we do 8K?
Of course.
Yeah.
Atari Jaguar was the world's first 64-bit console in 1992 or 3.
Was it 64-bit or was it 128-bit?
Oh, whatever. It was nonsense. It didn't mean anything.
And there were no games. There was nothing. I had a cousin that got it.
16 gigabyte memory space or whatever. It's 4K or whatever. 64.
The Atari Jaguar is a great example of marketing hype and no delivering.
Yeah.
Fascinating. So where does this rank it? Where does this put it with Sony now? Because this console war, obviously Sony had the advantage. They've sold more units than Microsoft. I feel like they'll always have the advantage. Do you just think that it's like that, or do you think if people are just going to jump ship now?
No, I don't think anyone's jumping ship. Sony has their lead. They have the people who are on the Sony platform value it for the exclusive games that they have and I think they've got a good thing going on. They've got a nice backward compatibility story. They've got a nice online service story. I think that's all secure. The thing I'll say for Microsoft, the thing that they've, you know, by failing, right, by losing in video game consoles, something wonderful has happened at Microsoft, right? So they have the most gamer-centric gamer platform there is. I mean, they have done things that they never would have done otherwise because they failed. And so you as an Xbox gamer have now got this multi-generation backward compatibility thing. There are hundreds and hundreds of games, the original Xbox, mostly the Xbox 360, that all work on the Xbox One. Those games and Xbox One games are all going to work on this coming xCloud service. And so it's kind of like an investment. You know, you buy these games, they're going to work in the future. And I think that's cool. There's the cross-play stuff, which they've really innovated on. There's the services stuff that's building up to this xCloud thing, like Xbox Game Pass and Xbox Game Pass Ultimate, PC version of Xbox Game Pass if you just want to do PC. Xbox Play Anywhere, where you can start a game on an Xbox, continue on a PC, continue back on the Xbox. You know, it's just same game, works everywhere. It just kind of goes on and on and on. And now they're going to extend it to mobile devices, smart TVs, and so forth with xCloud. And they've just gone gangbusters. They haven't seen great success in terms of, you know, units sold or number of gamers or whatever. I mean, I don't remember the exact number, but the number of people who are on Xbox Live Gold paying for Xbox Live is in the, I want to say, 60 million range.
That's actually tremendous.
Well, not compared to other digital media ecosystems, right?
I mean, what's Sony's?
Sony is over 100 million. So,
is it really?
Yeah, they just hit 100 million. So, but compared to, like, in other words, games are supposed to compete with, you know, with TV shows and with movies and stuff, right? And from a dollar standpoint, they do. But as far as like a sheer numbers standpoint, people playing on consoles is actually pretty small. You know, there's most gaming is casual gaming. It's a mother in line at a supermarket on her phone, or a guy sitting in traffic or whatever, hopefully not sitting in traffic, a guy sitting on a commuting, whatever it is, or a woman commuting. It doesn't, guy, woman, whatever, but, it's casual gaming. And so, you know, the services push is kind of neat because it allows them to maybe expand the audience to a broader group of people. But as far as like actual console gaming goes, I mean, these are kind of small numbers, right? 900, it was 1 billion people on Apple's platforms, 900 million on iOS, 800 million probably on just iPhone, you know, something like that. 1.5 million people are on PCs. 800 and probably 50-ish million now are on Windows 10. 2.5 billion, I think, was the figure on Android. 60 million on Xbox Live. And probably only half of them are on the newest console. I mean, that's not great. That's a pretty big number. Yeah. Not compared to those other numbers.
I think it's still it is a niche, right? For like, I, by the way, I've paid for Xbox Gold. I have an Xbox Live account. I've been paying for it since Xbox Live.
What do you use it for?
Nothing. I just pay for it every year.
Right. So Microsoft loves customers like you.
Yeah, I'm the best customer in the world because I've been paying for it because it's the what if I need it.
The what if I need it. Yeah. Okay. Well, maybe you will in the future, but
I mean, I have an Xbox.
Well, eventually you won't need one, you know. You'll be able to play Xbox games on your Fire TV or whatever.
Wild. Yeah. All right, Paul, let's wrap it up. Guys, obviously, if you enjoy the show, you could fund us. You could support us by going to patreon.com/whatthetech. We appreciate every dollar you pay us because it helps us continue what we're doing. For all things Paul, go to therot.com. Paul, do you have a couple minutes to do a bonus show, talk about our travels?
Yeah.
Okay. Yeah. Excellent. Yeah. We're going to do this live, so if you're watching this live, stay tuned. If not, or if you are watching live and you want to support us and continue doing these bonus content, bonus stuff that we do, patreon.com/whatthetech. You can follow Paul on Twitter @TheRot. You can follow me @AndrewZarian. What do you have there? Is that a dead MacBook?
No, this is a working MacBook. And I got to tell you, well, we'll talk about that.
Oh, yeah. What MacBook is that? Can I ask?
MacBook Air.
MacBook Air. A new one.
Well, yeah, it's the same old case and screen, but it's an entirely new logic board and Touch ID strip.
We'll talk about that on the bonus show. Guys, go to our website, gfknetwork.com. Subscribe to the podcast. Obviously, thank our sponsors, Warby Parker, Hackable, and, of course, Netgear for supporting the show. And we'll see you all next time. Take care.